Robert Scott the Bell
Robert
Show.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
Now, the voice of health, freedom, and liberty, here's Robert Scott Bell.
All right, welcome everybody. A very special Sunday conversation edition of the Robert Scott Bell Show from the Wellness Revolution Health and Freedom Summit. This is something that has been going on for 25 years, Terry and Stu Warner, and that's kind of cool because my show has been going for 25 years, since 1999 as well. We're at the Hyatt Regency Atlanta, March 7th through 10th. This is the 10th when this is airing, and I have someone that I'm very excited to bring on the show. She's with me now, Dr. Liz Anderson Peacock. Right?
Hello.
Did I say it right?
You did.
And was the a maiden name Anderson or Peacock or the whole
Anderson.
Three?
Anderson. Anderson was a maiden name,
so you
yes.
married into a Peacock family.
I did.
That is so cool. Now, you're from Canada always?
Yes.
Originally? And
yes.
Even now. Okay. So, and she's a doctor of chiropractic, which we love, and specializes, if I'm not mistaken, in the kids, pediatric chiropractic.
I love kids. Yeah. Yes. Special interest in there for sure.
So we're hitting on all cylinders already. I'm very excited. Now, I just grabbed you sort of off the stage. Yeah. You were presenting to the chiropractors here in that track. And maybe we could start with, what was your presentation overview? What was it about? Was there something unique about what you were presenting and bringing here to Atlanta?
Well, first of all, I sort of always have a plan when I'm speaking, but I don't always execute the original plan. It all
right.
depends on what the flavor of the room is.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really wanted to bring to the audience today was the sort of a four-step process that I think is applicable to anybody at any point in time in their life. It doesn't have to be a doctor at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes actually from the Tanner model of nursing. It's really interesting. And it's notice, interpret, respond, and reflect. And we can use that in every area of our life,
mm-hmm.
right? It's noticing, which is we all are taking in information in every moment, and whether it's related to our health, whether it's related to family, whatever it is, we are bringing in this information, and we have it through our senses. We have it through literally our eyes, our ears. Of course, we're eye dominant, but ears are sensory system. Sometimes you're feeling the vibes in the room. You
mm-hmm.
know, there's all these little nuances. What do we do with that information? Right? How do we pay attention to it? Is it irrelevant? Is it distracting? Is
yeah.
it, I need more information. So then comes the part of interpreting. What does it mean? What do I need to do with that information? And then from the standpoint of in healthcare, when we have patients that come in, we are getting all this data, and then we have to decide, what does this mean in the context? So we can either be a reductionist and look at it in a part, or we can look at it more in a whole,
mm-hmm.
and then we can look at it as a whole as an individual, and then whole as a society of the being in on the planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can break it out into much bigger models.
Yes.
So what do we want to do with it? What information do we need to act upon? Is there new information we have to access, whatever, to assist us on the way? Then it's responding. So if we implement a plan, then it's a matter of, where is that plan working? Is there new information coming in that I need to adapt?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the reflection piece. And the reflection piece for me in healthcare is when I go at the end of the day and I look at the patients that I've seen, is what are the ones that I'm learning new nuances from? What do I need to do more of? What do I need to do less of? Is there more information I need to access to assist them?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very reflective point. But this is really relevant, I think, for every single person, whether it's in a business, if you're dealing with your kids, if you're dealing with whatever it might be,
yeah.
because it's just so simple. And so I was applying this with respect to colleagues on how they're, you know, how are they applying this with respect to pediatrics?
Right, Well, I want to go back a lot further when you were not Dr. Liz Anderson Peacock, but little Lizzie Peacock. No, Lizzie Anderson.
Anderson,
it would be. Yeah, Elizabeth Anderson, right? In Canada growing up, were you always in the Ontario province?
I was.
And did you have a dream of growing up to be a doctor of chiropractic, or when did that come to be from childhood?
Well, that was really interesting because I was in university and I was sort of on the scholarship, and I watched my friends that went into medicine, my friends that went into dentistry, my friends that went into law. And then I heard this thing about chiropractic. I'm like, what the heck is that? I've never heard anything about it. And then, of course, it's like anything in your awareness. All of a sudden I heard about it, and all of a sudden I see all these shingles everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is this? And it was really interesting to go way back.
Mm-hmm.
Is as a kid, I had severe allergies. And when I say severe, I mean, I was allergy tested. I had 10 years of allergy shots.
Give me a high five on that. You survived. It's funny. I've never met anybody that has said it exactly as I do. I had 10 years of allergy shots.
Yeah.
I had 100 holes poked in my back. Every one of them said, oh, you're allergic to all of that.
So I had two bedrooms as a little kid. Mm-hmm. One had an air purifier in it that I went into sort of through June through to the first frost.
Yeah.
Because it was mostly pollens.
Yeah.
And then I had my bedroom that had everything else in it. And wow. I remember as a six-year-old, this is my age, but I would have a glass of water beside my bed.
Yeah.
And I had either pyrobenzamine or I had Dimetapp. And I remembered I would take that and then I would have no symptoms. I'm like, yes, I'm healthy. Yeah.
Dimetapp, I remember that. And so, we had the Afrin nasal spray. Did you ever try that?
No, never had nasal sprays.
Oh, my God. That was like heaven. I was like, I can breathe. But you can only use it 3 days in a row. Other than that, it would get worse. I mean, we're talking. Yeah. I think we got some similarity here in our backstory.
Kidding. So what was really crazy with this is then I even, as a little kid, thought, if I chew that, then it's going to get in me faster and I'll be healthier faster. So it was really bizarre because when I went to my first chiropractor, because I'd hurt my back, and she looked at my whole spine, and part of me was saying, why are you just looking at that part, like the whole spine, because that's the part that hurts. It didn't make sense. And I had a science degree already, so you think I'd kind of know something.
So were you at university level at this
point? I was. Okay. So fast forward 12 years type of thing. And anyways, so she said, well, one thing's attached to everything else, so you can't just look at one part without the influence of everything else. And she asked me if I'd ever had any injuries as a kid, and if I ever hit my head, because she was up in my neck a lot. I'm palpating, and I'm like, I had a car accident when I was like 3, and I hit the dashboard, because it's before we had seatbelts.
Right, remember those? We grew up at that time.
And nobody checked my neck, but I had two black eyes.
Wow.
And then 3 years later, I develop all these allergies. And so she said, well, what causes your allergies? And I'm looking at her like, oh my gosh, you're not very smart. And it's like pollen's in the air. And she said, this was the game changer. She said, if pollen's in the air cause allergies, would you agree that if you and I right now are breathing the same air, that we're also breathing in the same pollens? Mm-hmm. Or do they just magically go to only your nostril?
Right. And, I love it.
And I'm like, no, they're obviously going to both of our noses, right? Nostrils.
Yeah.
And she said, well, if pollens cause allergies, why is it that you have symptoms and I do not?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the...
That was the aha moment.
Aha.
Yeah, I had, as I've gone around since that time, I said, look, you got pollen everywhere, right? Let's lock two people in the room, one that, quote unquote, has an allergy, one that's not. And let's flood the room with the allergens.
Yeah.
And we'll say, if the allergens are the cause, just as you said, shouldn't they both be having, and other than, normally if you have debris,
you're
might have an irritation.
But,
why do you have a hyperimmune response and I don't, right? That was the thing. And so you start looking at, oh my gosh, the allergens are not the cause of allergies.
Right.
There's something else on the inside.
There's something else going on that my body is adapting in a way that's trying to do its best, but it's overreacting as a foreign invader.
Yeah.
And I've never thought of that question, and nobody asked me that question before.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, well, what controls your immune system, or at least what communicates and regulates your immune system? And I'm like, I don't know. The immune system is the immune system. I didn't know this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so she said, well, there is a marriage between your innate immune system and your innate nervous system, and they talk to each other, and you've had certain issues that have been going on with your neck, and we're not just going to look at your low back, your chief complaint, but we're going to look at these other things too. And I can't promise, because it's not like a chiropractor is going to say, I adjust you for allergies. That's inappropriate. We don't do that.
Right.
But as your body's able to comprehend and respond to the environment better, there should be a change in how your body's comprehending and responding, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I had my first adjustment. It was like someone had taken earmuffs off my ears, even though I'd never tested for a hearing problem. And it was like it was crazy. It was like my brain cleared. It's like I had a fog that I never knew I had.
And lifted.
Lifted.
Yeah.
And my allergies improved like 80%.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, that's what I want to do.
Folks, this is, the beauty of chiropractic, if we can call it medicine, but you understand what I'm saying. The removal of interference from the body for the free flow of energy, information, and intelligence, innate intelligence as it's called, it opens up the pathways that were considered uncurable in many ways, even though she's not saying they're treating disease, right? I get that. But the reality is the body knows what to do if you remove the interference.
100%.
And, a lot of my focal point, as a homeopath, I went down, even though I was introduced to chiropractic as a college student as well. Mm-hmm. I'd never really heard about it, knew nothing other than I hear, oh, that's crazy stuff, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, as I was an athlete, despite my allergies and everything, I willed myself to overcome a lot. Didn't know any better because it was the only body I had. And I had a kind of a pinched nerve in the thoracic region. And I went into my first chiropractor. Now, actually, it was some years before that, as a teenager, I do remember having an osteopath, a doctor of osteopathic medicine, actually do an adjustment on me.
Yeah.
That helped me. So I kind of had a background in that, but I didn't really know, right, that whole history. So I go in and finally get chiropractic. I'm like, this is pretty cool. Ended up marrying one, but that's years later. But just absolutely love it. And I became a homeopath. And, you know, I looked at all of these, you know, that you call innate intelligence, we call vital force,
right?
Different words for same thing. How do we free that up? How do we give the information, allow that inflammation to flow, information, so the inflammation goes away? But a lot of the allergies I suffered from, and I think there's probably a commonality even with an adjustment perspective, comes through the gut and the dysregulation mm-hmm. due to damage to microbiome, systemic chronic inflammation of the lining, on and on it goes. So when people hear me say, oh, it's just an adjustment and that's it. No, it's connected to everything, but allowing for the healing to occur, that also is a nervous system issue too. And so one will build on the other and build on the other. It's, you know, it's like 1 + 1 = 300 in a good way.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. You know, exactly. It doesn't really matter to me what we call it, but you're right. It's, we sort of have this philosophy behind chiropractic, and there's a number of principles behind that, which is sort of the view and the lens that we use in a traditional way of chiropractic.
Yeah.
And what's so beautiful about that is that it is honoring the body's ability to self-regulate and to heal itself. Mm-hmm. And bodies are designed to recreate themselves until we're done in our lifespan, and then we're done. Yeah. And then as soon as that vital force, that innate intelligence is no longer there, then we become dust to dust again.
Right.
And, you know, there's something that's there that is in a living thing that reorganizes it and recreates it until that life mm-hmm. is no longer present.
Yeah. A lot of the inspiration I get is, you know, talking to folks like you that have been through this journey. And it's uncanny because I didn't know about your history before we just met, and how, I guess, you know, we're not the only ones to suffer these things, but I think it's kind of unique and funny at the same time how your journey led you to, you know, where you ended up. And I want to get more of the backstory in Canada and chiropractic as well as we go here. But finding that these ancient traditions and healing all kind of speak of a similar thing in organizing intelligence and energy, the chi, the ki, mm-hmm.
vibration,
you know, all of that. And we can come to it through many different mechanisms and means. Chiropractic was interesting in the 20th century, how it formulated through, you know, Palmer on forward, a very unique and specific system mm-hmm. that would, you know, work with that I don't think is largely understood by most people today.
I would agree.
Because they go in and they still think back pain or, you know, headache, and that's all, not the whole connection to everything. And it kind of, you know, knowing what I know now about chiropractic, it annoys me if a chiropractor doesn't go all the way in to the philosophy, because I love that philosophy.
Right. Well, philosophy really is the lens that dictates how you view it, right? Yeah. Metaphysics is then testing that philosophy, right?
Yeah.
And then you apply it through the art and mm-hmm. and the science. So, yeah.
So was there a chiropractic school in Canada, or did you come to the States where did you go?
Yeah, no, I went to the only chiropractic college at the time in Canada was Canadian Memorial Chiropractic College. That's where I went. Mm-hmm. And 4 years there, I did a prior 4 years, University of Winnipeg, and a year at University of Calgary mm-hmm. and came out. And then, you know, it was really interesting. I wrote my letter as to why I wanted to become a chiropractor to go in, because that's what they did back then, is why do you want to become a chiropractor? Mm-hmm. And I was talking about holism and healing and just so excited and everything else with mm-hmm. that. And then when I came out, I wasn't practicing what I was expecting to. I wasn't practicing that way. Mm-hmm. I was off my true north. And it was interesting because one day I was really sad in my practice. I was actually considering leaving the profession. And I'm looking up at my library, and I see this piece of paper that's between two books, and I pull it out, and it's my letter on why I wanted to become a chiropractor that I had written like over 4 years prior.
Right.
And I wept. I cried.
Brought you back.
Yeah, it did. But I'm like, oh my gosh, how did I get over here mm-hmm. when this is what I wanted to do? And so I really had to sort of like that dark night of the soul, right? Is that, okay, I need to reorganize here because I'm really looking at things in a reductionist model. And there's a benefit to that. There's no question. But that's not why I went in. I wanted to go in to look at it more of a holistic model. And the spine is our access point to get into the nervous system. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't doing what I had originally anticipated.
How did you, looking back now, the mechanics of how you shifted, funny enough to say it that way, but from that philosophy to going into that reductionism, how did that happen?
So I think what happens is that there's so much to learn. You've got your anatomy, your physiology, your pathology, your microbiology, all the ologies. Mm-hmm. And it is reductionist because you've got a volume of information to learn that it's, unless you have that foremost in your mind, you're focusing on just memorize, context it, where are you going to use it? Mm-hmm. And I think it's just part of the system that the way that everyone's trained, right? I would say the same thing with some of my friends in medicine that have gone in with a very holistic model and come out and they're very reductionistic. Right. Like the world just goes into more and more and smaller part, or it's also siloed. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you're this kind of a professional, then you're not allowed to ask the questions over here. Mm-hmm. You're separated, which is separation from whole. Right.
Yeah. Well, and it's easier to manipulate and control people that are isolated in silos. Right. And so the view of chiropractic in Canada is similar to what we experienced in the States, thought of as a stepchild, kind of not real doctoring, right? That kind of thing.
I would say, we have really good inroads. I think it's very unique into the location, and I can't speak to the knowledge of it at a greater level. I just don't have the information available, but my assumption is it's like everything is that you've got certain healthcare providers that are able to communicate well with other healthcare providers. So they form alliances, and then other people that are, you've got the extremes on both, on like everything, right?
Yeah, of course.
And so then it becomes questionable. But healthcare is very personal, or it should be.
Well, and it should,
and
it should be
relationships.
And there should be caring, which there's not a lot of that in what we call healthcare in the West anymore. I call it disease creation, disease management machinery.
Yeah.
And even in Canada, as much as, I'm from the States, I go up there for many years in a row at the Total Health Show, and I just had wonderful, I just loved it. The people were great. And the question of, the system, right? You look at our system, your system. I don't like to look at it as competing or one's better or worse. I just say, this is the experience of it.
Right.
And it was kind of, and I brought this up many times on the show, and now that I've got another bonafide Canadian I'm talking to, I want to ask her. We're talking with Dr. Liz Anderson Peacock, and she has a website, drliz.ca, drliz.ca. So check her out. We'll talk more about all this. But one of the things that, I'm very much a proponent of health freedom, which seems like not a controversial thing until you realize how much we live under a kind of a tyrannical medical monopoly in the United States, but also I believe in Canada under the single payer socialized system. And I would say to the people that would come to this show, because it was holistic, really natural people and things like that, I said, you like your system, it's better than the States, right? Oh yeah, yeah, you guys are horrible. You guys are like, I didn't take it personal. And I said, okay, all right, how many of you use that system that you have here in America? I'm sorry, in Canada. And they would go, oh, we would never use it. And I'm like, wait, what? Excuse me, let me back up a little bit. What do you mean? Well, it only covers, drugs and surgery and vaccines and stuff. We don't like that stuff. I said, but you're happy that other people that might be poor get that you know is not good for you. Oh, I never thought of it that way. So it's like the element of the freedom to choose things beyond whatever the government has said. This is the sanctioned thing. Now, I don't know if they cover chiropractic in it at all,
they used to, but they don't anymore. It depends on the province that you're at in as well, because it's provincially regulated.
Gotcha.
The other thing too is that I would say that going back to the piece with caring and going back to the piece with getting to know who the individual is. And I think that for me, the frustration, which I would think it's happening for so many different industries, is the personal responsibility the individual has to take on. Mm-hmm. And that's sometimes the difficult thing, because I'm having to say to a patient, you're obese and you're coming in with knee pain and you're wondering why you have knee pain.
Yeah.
Like, come on. We're like, let's help you. Let's get you the resources that you need. But you need to value you enough to do something about it. You need to love you enough to make the change. And it's not necessarily going to be easy. Mm-hmm. Some of these things are not easy whatsoever. And I think that that's where people's hands are clipped in having time management, or even, I'm going to say, energy management in healthcare with how much time you have with an individual patient, because it's not, I'm going to say, it's not rewarded that way.
No, not at all.
And it's so siloed that you're not allowed to go outside of your silo. So the same thing, if you have someone that's in orthopedics and they've got someone that's obese with knee pain and they need a knee replacement. It's like, you've got a decision. It's
hard. How many years or decades of misusing their body because they didn't take responsibility? Maybe they didn't know how or they had to, but I mean, that's a lot of the Western mindset, just not unique to Canada or United States, but pretty much the West. And so the idea of using healthcare as rescuing you from yourself and your behavior.
True.
You know, and realize, hey, you know, if you had eaten this way instead of that way all these years, you wouldn't be here with all of this.
Yeah.
But here you are now. And so you're reliant, dependent, and vulnerable, you know, and victimized in a sense, maybe through deception or maybe just laziness, any number of things. I'm not trying to accuse anybody individually of that, but this is the kind of system that we have, whether we're in a semi-capitalistic, and we don't have a free market for healing in America either, or a socialized single-payer system. As I, you know, interacted with my friends in Canada, they're like, oh, yeah, I didn't think about that. Because I think freedom is really an optimal place to be as far as to be able to choose the path that we want, and not to be limited or restricted. And I think most people, when they step back, they go, well, I agree with that. And then they go, but, you know, they're drawn back into the victim mentality. It's like, but I need, and I'm thinking, wow, they're really not providing what you need. And you've acknowledged that and you're falling again, prey to a habit. And so again, I'm not picking on you Canadians. I know I love you and you're big in this audience too, but I love to have these discussions because, you know, hopefully they make you think about, you know, how to make a system better if you want, or start a new system, right? And a lot of people are doing that now.
I think starting new systems, and I would also suggest that there needs to be education at the basic level. Mm-hmm. The more we can teach children that bodies are designed to heal and to be well, and that we're multifaceted.
Yeah.
You know, we are spiritual, we are physical, we are mental, we are communal, we're social. We have all these layers to us, and we need to pay attention to all of that. And kids intuitively know that. Like, they're very plugged in, right? They have awareness levels that we sort of, I like to say, I dumbed down myself from,
right?
Just molding and sculpting over the years, can't feel that way. Mm-hmm. I have 5 grandkids and I am absolutely stunned by their ability to tune in to what's around them in their environment when they choose to.
Yeah.
And very connected and very aware. So, you know, there's always better ways, and people just need to start to make choices and to support those that are trying to make different systems, you know, and to encourage that.
When was you go into chiropractic field, now you're a doctor, and was there an immediate, I want to focus on pediatrics in that community, the kids, or was that something that evolved over many years of doing this?
It evolved over many years. Mm-hmm. And there was, I would say just because I was so interested in more of what we would call a salutogenic model. Mm-hmm. Salutogenesis is really more of saluto and genesis. Genesis is birth of. Mm-hmm. Saluto is health versus pathogenesis. Mm-hmm. And because I was interested in salutogenesis, I was seeing a lot of moms that were pregnant, wanting to get pregnant and then pregnant and taking care of them during their pregnancy. And then they were like, have you check my baby. And from there, I needed more information. And so what I did in the 90s, there was one program that had started up in the States. So I traveled one weekend per month for 3 years to Chicago. So 36 weekends over 3 years to do my diplomate in that. Mm-hmm. And then there was there was a lot of other components to that. And it really opened my eyes to things. I'm like, wow, I'd never even considered this, and opened up the world to asking bigger questions. And that was just absolutely magical.
So when I think about the chiropractic model, again, philosophy inclusive, but you're looking at a child or a baby, you know, it's just a small adult, is it not? I mean,
no.
Obviously, I mean, that's what I want to go into. Why would it require such speciality? What is that, you know, some of the obvious, but some maybe not so obvious things that you could share about the difference in what you do, your gifts as a chiropractor in interacting with that community?
Right. Well, the technique is completely different from what you're going to deal with an adult. The types of things that we see are very different. There's immaturity in joints and structures, and there's a sequence to how growth is occurring. Mm-hmm. There's a sequence to how the nervous system is developing. There's a sequence to when primitive reflexes are being integrated calibrated and new reflexes are coming on. So you have to understand all of that. You need to know what your red flags are. So when you're dealing with something that's an emerging condition that you need to refer, obviously, for emergent care.
Yeah.
So you need to know, stay in your lane, basically. And then being a resource for a lot of parents as well to help them through that process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've come to conclude that, you know, one thing, if we get children a better start in life, they would have a chiropractic adjustment the moment they're born.
I'd say they have a chiropractic assessment.
Assessment, okay.
Whether you adjust or not, it depends.
Sure,
right?
And I think that's fair, because maybe somebody doesn't have a traumatic birth, they come right out, it's all good. But there's too much trauma in terms of the way birthing is done in our Western world. I would say more often than not, just my assessment, not as a chiropractor, that probably more often than not, they need some help. am I exaggerating a little?
No, I mean that would be the ideal world, is where you could at least assess and also have the normals recorded.
Yeah.
Right?
That would be amazing.
Because it's pretty extensive. I mean, we do our reflexes, we do our ranges of motion, we do spinal palpation. There's a lot of elements with respect to an assessment of a newborn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're doing head circumferences, you're palpating to look for anterior and posterior fontanelles, you're looking at all your respiratory cardio stuff as well. Even though that's not what our specialty is, you're still documenting it.
Right. But you know? The model that you've just described comes from an allopathic world. Now you got to take it to that next level, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. So it's the integration of all of it in the development of the infant, right? And development occurs, like the brain development, I'm grossly simplifying it, but it's from caudad to cephalad, where the spinal cord is cephalad to caudad, and we go from gross motor control to fine motor control. So there's sequencing to everything. And it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome.
I love it.
It's been a joy. I'll tell you, I just met the most magical parents and remarkable children and seen things that I can't explain in a linear model as to how these children have, many of them have healed themselves. It's really remarkable. I like to say each body is far more creative and resourceful than ever led to believe.
Yeah.
We just need to understand how to tap into that.
Is there any integration or is it an elective completely? And a parent would say, we just had a baby, we would like a chiropractic assessment. Or is that built in at all to the system, where if you have a baby and you'd say, I'd like that they would offer that as an option?
It's not offered as an option.
Okay.
No.
Yeah. That's a bummer. Yeah.
Not yet.
Hello, Canada. I don't know. But hello, America, too, right? We still
got that. Well, and, you know, chiropractic, pardon me, originally grew through word of mouth. And I would say it still is growing through word of mouth. Like, that's how I see my patients primarily. It's word of mouth. People that are like, you know what? This makes so much sense. I've seen this happen with my child. I would like the opportunity for my friend who has this with their child. And again, it's not like I'm treating a condition.
Right.
It's a matter of allowing for the self-expression, self-healing, self-regulation, ability to comprehend and respond in a better way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wrote that down. Notice, interpret, respond, reflect.
Yes.
Yeah. And is this stuff that we can find on the drliz.ca?
Nope.
You haven't put that out yet?
No.
We're just getting it out here now.
Because I've got such an old website. It's got to be redeveloped. So that actually comes from the Tanner model of clinical nursing.
Okay.
It's actually for clinical judgment. It's a process that they teach nurses. There's like over 200 references as to the value of that. And I'm like, I don't understand why we don't know that in our education systems, in all of healthcare, let alone applying it. So I even teach that to my grandkids. Notice, interpret, respond, and reflect. And they're learning this because they can apply that in their own life. You know, notice, what are you supposed to learn? What is the information you're getting back?
Right.
What does it mean? Do you have to pay attention to it? You know, what's the significance of it? Is it from a trusted advisor? Is it someone being a pain in the butt, right? And a troublemaker or whatever.
Right.
And then it's a matter of, so now what are you going to do? Are you going to respond to that? Or is it going to be like, you know, like, let's go on. And then what are you learning about yourself? What can you do more of? What can you do less of? And that's the beauty of it, is that we get to evolve with every time we're looking at ourselves that way.
So post-COVID crisis, we're still dealing with the lingering impact, not only emotionally, physically, mentally, all of that, politically too. Is there any resolve of the chiropractic community in Canada to go, there's so much that was done wrong, we've got to correct it so this never happens again?
I'm not aware of a discussion on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this has, you know, been my message here in the States, where they're looking at the... let's say roundtable discussions and strategy sessions, and guess who's not invited? Naturopaths, homeopaths, chiropractors, all the people that were right about how to protect you from this thing and how to, you know, navigate it and be okay. And we're not part of the discussion. And this isn't me going, oh, I just want to be, I'm not interested in a lot dealing with a lot of those things, but at the same time, recognizing the impact on my fellow Americans, your fellow Canadians, is like, we want to do something. We want to make it better. We don't want to see us go down that road again. So if I would make, I don't call it accusations, but, you know, stern, hello, guys, you got a very powerful profession that's doing a lot of incredible work. Come together and stand up against this tyranny as a totalitarian, you know, not totalitarian, as a totality, so that there is such strength that they can't just pick you off because there was one chiropractor, you know, in New Brunswick or wherever, said this stuff and then lost her license because she actually spoke with integrity about the mission of chiropractic. And I think that's, you know, coming back to the fear. Do we lead with fear? Do we lead with courage? And do we become examples? Because we, you know, in America, of course, we know there's the Wilk versus AMA historically. Yes. 1976, the Supreme Court decision showed that the AMA and the medical profession was colluding to try to eliminate its competition of chiropractic. And so we've seen that around the Western world where modern medicine, pharmaceutical medicine has become predominant and a monopoly. So they gathered together and said, we're not putting up with this. And they fought it, right? The question is, where is that resolved today? And I mean, and I'm speaking now to the chiropractic community at large. I'll talk to any DC about this. I'll say, because some of them are courageous and I can talk. They get it. They're like, yeah, I'm with you. At the same time, I recognize the threat to your ability to do your thing, right? And the medical doctors found out that licensure was not all it was cracked up to be. You thought it was freedom. You thought it was, you know, escalation, elevation, and status. And it turns out it's a control mechanism to threaten you with the loss of your ability to do what you love to do and are trained to do and are qualified to do. If you don't do it the way the government or who owns or controls the government tells you.
So and that's like, in so many fields, right? Like to be a hairstylist, you now need a license.
So that brings up a fundamental philosophy, which I love. Again, talking chiropractic philosophy, but a philosophy of subjugating ourselves to formerly what we'd call a servant government in America and allowing them who know little or nothing about what we are actually trained to do as holistic healers, chiropractic, and say, yeah, you guys can. Yeah, go ahead and tell us what to do. Like, who would do that? And yet, here we are, you know.
I know.
We wanted to be, and I say we, just in a proverbial sense, wanted to be like the doctors, right? And after winning against the doctors, then the chiropractors go, we want in, we want licenses too. And I'm like, no. And I'm trying to tell that to homeopaths and naturopaths. It's like, that's a trap. It's a trap. We've got enough history here, and particularly in the 20th century, but now the 21st, that it is not the way to make your profession strong and able to innovate and respond to the needs. And there are certifications, board certifications, there's, you know, qualifications, you graduate, you don't, that make you qualified. The licensure is a trap and it doesn't necessarily protect the public. In many cases, it protects the bad apples within a profession.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's like everything. It's a bell curve, is that most people are doing a really good job and they want to continue to do a good job. And then at both extremes, you have there's the extremes of the bell curve. And I think that much of regulation does come and develops forward because of the bad apples. So X happens with the patient. So then they bring in a new standard to stop X from happening again. Right. So it's, for example, sexual misconduct as an example. And it's because of those few bad apples, a lot of things end up getting move into the more control. This is what these are the lines that you have to play within is how I would view that.
And the irony of that, interestingly enough, you bring that particular part of the profession up, and I'm not talking chiropractic now, I'm talking from the allopathic medical profession in America. There was a big expose by, we were in Atlanta, by the Atlanta Journal, their paper here, on doctors who engaged in sexual misconduct with their patients. And every one of them got their license given back to them.
Wow.
In other words, either they were temporarily suspended or they all got them back. But they've used licensure to beat up the doctors and delicense the doctors that are doing what? Holistic therapies, non-drug therapies.
Right.
And those people don't get their licenses back. So you see how the manipulation of something that could be considered, we could argue it's good because we want to protect people from those. It turns out it wasn't really about that. Or if it was, it's lost, long since lost. So again, coming back to philosophy, this is why I like having these discussions. I'm not going to solve the problem here necessarily, but I like to talk about it. So we all think about it and we go, is there a better way? Is there a different way? Or do we just have to accept the way it is? And I'm not a guy that likes to accept the way it is if it's wrong, right?
Right. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. I mean, So I guess there needs to be some new modeling in how we judge outcomes and patients' satisfaction with the care they've received, in my mind, should actually be one of the highest outcomes, right?
Yeah.
And looking at more social science, perhaps, versus the traditional randomized control trial. Like everything, right? There is an advantage and a disadvantage.
Yeah.
And to all of it, like the randomized control trial is great if you're having to deal with a drug because you're wanting to look at something long term.
Sure.
And it should be transparent and there should be no conflicts of interest
right.
on the whole trial piece. You don't do run-in periods. You don't do a number of things. You don't have, anyways, that's a whole other topic.
No, I'm with you.
It's an important topic too.
Yeah.
And anyways, I think that there needs to be more support to look at putting the patient first in the standpoint is what is the patient experience? What brings out the patient's experience to the best way? Mm-hmm. What is what are patients looking for? Why are they looking for it? And how do we best serve them for that? And then, as I said, the outcomes. Are you happy with the outcome? What so what does that mean with happy? Are there better health outcomes? And studying that. And sadly, that hasn't happened yet. But I think there's more of a ground swelling and an opportunity because a lot of people are they're questioning health more than ever. In what does it actually mean? Does it mean the absence of symptoms, therefore I'm healthy? Or does it mean, you know what? There's this actually sliding scale. And we have this sort of norm in the middle. And at one end, we have early disease, early detection, abnormal function, early prevention, if you will, but it's still prevention of a disease. And then we have down the scale further, more dis-ease, which eventually becomes pathology. And that requires a whole other ball game. And then the sliding scale on the other side is how do we maximize health and wellness? And how can we measure that we've maximized health and wellness? How do we measure that me changing a diet has changed my potential ability to not have a heart attack? Like that, I don't know how you would measure that. That's for the researchers to figure out. And moving into more of this model of salutogenesis. And what would
that down? You said
salutogenesis.
That before.
Yes, it was originally coined by Anton Antonovsky. And it's brilliant because you're looking at where do we want to go as an individual, as a family, as a society, as a community. And what are the healthcare dollars that don't have to be spent on disease management and could probably just be more spent on emergencies? And how would our society look different if we have healthy people functioning in our society? How does that change the mentality, the ability to think, the ability to interact with other people, the ability to appreciate other people, the ability to bring forth genius within, you know? I mean, it's very exciting when you start thinking about that side, which is where I prefer to be.
Yeah, I like it too. How do we, or how, let's say, how did we adopt preventive techniques that actually cause disease and still to this day call that prevention? Like, you know, we talk about placebo controlled studies like they do on drugs. Turns out they didn't do them on the vaccines, right? None of them on the schedule. And then they say it's the gold standard. We don't even, you know, question it. And if you do, you know, you're somehow should be shunned or you should lose your license. It became more a cult or a religion than a scientific endeavor, which, you know, I know you appreciate science as do I. I was a little egghead in school as well. And then come to find out how disappointed you are to learn that there's not a lot of integrity in it left. In some areas it exists, but when you start peeling back, you know, the layers, you're like, well, that wasn't following the scientific method at all. And then you're battering chiropractors or homeopaths for not being scientific. I'm like, well, we're very observational, which is the root of science, and then questioning based on observation to learn more and more. And so the idea of a gold standard not even being applied to something that now you can't even question. It's outrageous.
Well, and then you also can't apply the doubling up on various things. So, you know, the good old scientific, traditional scientific method is you have a hypothesis that is for one thing testable. You test it, then you measure the result, and then you do it initially at a very small scale, and then you bring it out from there.
I'm fasting today. I do every Friday. And so I found an organic restaurant thanks to Tobias here. And we're going to go, I'm going to break the fast on some organic food like I like
to.
Otherwise, I'll just keep fasting. So I'm appreciative of that very much as we go here.
All right.
So that's another part of, you know, the equation. When we care for ourselves, we love ourselves enough. We learn that indulging in good things is not a bad thing.
Right. Exactly.
Right. As opposed to, well, I criticize you because you're going for that. Well, like my food's bad. Like I'm not, you get to eat what you want, but
right.
I've evaluated and valued something that my body has responded to very well, like good chiropractic care,
right?
Like a good organic meal versus a chemically grown, genetically modified, you know, and you pay attention to this stuff. You're like, right. I don't know why, you know, of all the things we can talk about that are controversial, you know, you talk religion stuff, but the most, I would say almost the most controversial is diet. If you talk about meat eater versus vegetarian, it's like, oh, they hate each other.
Oh,
like, why
I know,
is
it's
that?
So hard.
They're like, what about your bio-individual needs? Maybe you do well on it and I wouldn't, and vice versa, and it's okay.
So, you know, it's really interesting. I saw Nick Gonzalez many years ago before he passed away.
A great friend, yes.
He was wonderful. Oh, and he looked and said, we have a unique epigenetic drift that from wherever we're from in our history, depending on where we've landed, the food may or may not, there's nuances, right? So I'm like to say someone from the sub-Saharan desert in Africa is, if that's their genetic history eons back, I'm exaggerating, of course, but for multiple generations,
right?
Do you think the diet is the same as the Inuit in Northern Canada? If you do a traditional diet, right?
Yeah.
One is going to be more, one's going to be
on,
more hunting, gathering by tradition, and none's going to be more higher in your fish and blubber and things like that in a traditional sense. So then I think the complexity, and the one thing I usually say to many of my patients, and I like to refer out to people that are doing this full time, but as a high overview, is start eating real food. Stuff that if you leave it on the table, it will rot or it will deteriorate. Because if you put this out and it won't over time, there's something going on there. You know, now unlike a nut and seed, I recognize that they're not going to rot.
Right.
But if you put them in water, they will. Enzymes.
I've been loving this interview from the moment we started. It even got better when you mentioned Nick Gonzalez.
Yeah, I mean, he was wonderful.
He was, you know, one of my best friends. And on this show, you know, our favorite guest, everybody's favorite guest, Nick would come on here and we would have a blast. And
God bless you, Nick. I became a patient of him, of his, until he passed away.
He did.
Yeah, I came down to the States.
Wow, look at you.
Saw him.
But you know,
he was my doc.
And he was one of the smartest people I'd ever met. And yet I saw him consult with various people that I didn't think were as smart as him, including myself, because that's what made him so smart.
Yeah.
He learned, he listened, he was open. And he was always curious.
Yes.
I'm like one of the most brilliant doctors you'll ever meet, and kind and compassionate. And again, recognizing the bio-individuality uniqueness of each of us, that some people can thrive on a vegetarian diet, some people will die on it, and vice versa as far as meat. And it isn't a one-size-fits-all. People get very culty or religious in their devotion to these things.
Yes.
And buy into dogma where it becomes more religious than a religion.
It's the same with movement, right? You've got the different groups and the factions of this is what you must do for movement. This is what you must do for movement.
Right.
And it's the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the uniqueness of each individual will dictate what they need to do. And I will say the uniqueness of what age the individual is too, because we go through transitions as we get older.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. So if I may ask, did you have something so serious that you sought out Dr. Nick? Or?
I did.
Oh my gosh.
I did.
The rest of the story now.
Uh-huh.
Are you willing to share a little bit?
Sure. I have a right baloney amputation.
Okay.
From 5 years ago.
Right?
Yeah. So I had a synovial sarcoma that developed. And I think there's a lot of history through that, but it's too long to share. Anyways, long and the short, it got diagnosed in 2007 after having 7 years of pain with it and me seeing multiple different healthcare professionals until finally I had a biopsy and we found out what it was. And in that moment, it was really interesting because I got a phone call from the surgeon and I appreciated the phone call because I didn't have to drive to Toronto to have him tell me the same thing. He just called me at home and told me what it was.
Yeah.
And in that moment, knowing what a sarcoma was, I'm like, oh my God, stomach drops. You're like, what does this mean to me, my family, you know, my life?
Sure,
and because it had it for a while. And then the second piece came in. So that was sort of like the physical initially being told you had cancer.
Right.
And then the next step out of his mouth was you need a CT because I want to make sure it hasn't metastasized to your lungs. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't expecting that. And then the next thing that happened is I then got into sort of my mental state, which was as my doctor mode on going through my Rolodex of what does it mean, synovial sarcoma? Oh, right. That's what it does. So I'm immediately on the internet and searching all that info. And as I'm doing that, This is the funniest thing. I'm looking at my library. I'm on my computer. I'm looking at my library, and there is Bruce Lipton's book. Dang. The biology of belief.
Yes.
The cell cannot be in two states at once. You're either in growth and repair, or you're in stress and non-repair. Right. I'll put
Fight
it that
or flight,
way.
Basically. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, look, I teach this stuff and look where I wasn't following it for my own self. So I made a very different decision. And so I went down to see Nick Gonzalez because I wasn't, believe it or not, I actually wasn't really worried after that point with the cancer. So I was treating it naturally for about 10 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then I wasn't worried. It was well circumscribed.
Yes.
It was anyways.
Yes.
It was distal and everything else. But then I was hiking in 2017 in Australia and I slipped, and where the tumor was on the ventral aspect of my foot and it had grown between some bones. But so it had, I had definitely tissue failure and it was just a matter of time. So when I slipped, I opened up the tumor and I had structural failure of my foot. And at that point I had a very different, literally a very different experience on saying, okay, now is time to do something very different. And I needed to go into the different model.
Right.
Now there was a lot of other things behind that too. So I'm going to do a big plug for Joe Dispenza.
Please.
Because I've been doing a lot of his work, meditating, and really trying to get myself into the space of nothingness. And I was at one of the resort, one of the events that he had, and I'm literally, we're doing this 4-hour meditation where it felt like it flew by.
Yeah.
And I'm in this nothingness. Like when I say nothingness, like I'm just an awareness in the void. There's nothing there. And I actually felt like I had this intelligence speak to me in that, of being sort of connected with everything. And it was, universe is safe, let it go. That's what I received as a message. And then a month later, I'm in South Africa and we are at this elephant sanctuary, and this big bull elephant comes up to me and I'm like, wow. And this, I all of a sudden I have tears rolling down my face and I don't exactly know why, but I'm having an emotional experience with this elephant. He's like 4-5 tons, crossed tusks.
Yeah.
I thought he was there because his tusks were crossed. I thought, well, it's like, maybe he can't eat or whatever. I hadn't talked to why he was there. But this elephant was coming up and touching me everywhere, and I'm touching it everywhere, and I'm just having this magical moment. And the message he kind of gave me was like, surrender, let it go. I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. And so then I asked the handlers, why is this elephant here? So I didn't know African elephants had sort of two extensions off their trunk to allow them to manipulate, fine-tune manipulation. And this elephant happened to have a plastic bag wrap around part of his trunk that ended up working like a tourniquet, and he had to have part of his trunk amputated.
Wow.
Like, what's the likelihood of those experiences? And so what I recognized was me doing a baloney amputation, the universe for my world.
You have to describe that for the lay audience.
Okay, so my below my knee, I have no leg, right? I have a partial of tibia and fibula bones below my knee, so I can bend my knee on my own, but I have a prosthetic below that. And the reason why that was done versus just my foot was it gives me better mechanical advantage to use a lot of different prosthetics, and I have a far better quality of life. So long and the short, in doing that, I kept seeing when I was meditating, my life opening up on the other side of this prosthetic, having a prosthetic and removing this body part, because we're so much more than a body part.
Right.
So I ended up going through this amputation, and it was crazy, my experiences. So I had a lot of friends that were meditating with me before I went in. I said, I wanted you to meditate on seeing me as being whole, love, gratitude, faith, joy, you know, that sort of thing, grace.
Yeah.
And I go into this meditation or into this amputation and I did it with an epidural in twilight. And so I was awake very, very quickly and I felt great because I'm like, I'm just like out there. And I knew I was going to have pain because that's obvious. I've got part of my lower leg is now missing. And that was physiological. I knew that that would go away. I created my own little protocol, which is not scientific, but it worked for me. And I did tuning forks to my spine because I wanted to gate pain at the spinal cord level because I knew certain areas, spinal.
How did you know about the tuning forks?
Well, it's vibration, right? So it's an interference.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure that I was changing that. I knew that the sensory system, which picks up information to go to the brain, was going to be saying, hello, where's the foot? Where's the foot? And I didn't have one. So I was creating some interference using tuning forks on my spinous processes.
Brilliant.
At that level, I was meditating. I was doing lots of sort of enzymes and things along the, like that. And I was doing mirror therapy as well. So these were all things I did myself. And within 4 months, I'm in a 5K walking. Within 6 months, I'm on my paddleboard. And within 11 months, I'm freaking scuba diving again.
Oh,
I built a prosthetic. And yeah. I mean, it was the most amazing experience. So that's when I say we are far more creative and resourceful than led to believe. We just have to pay attention, you know?
How did it affect sacrum at all in terms of the balance? And
well, initially, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, as soon as I got home, I got adjusted. I had a cranial sacral therapist and I had my chiropractor, you know, and I was thinking, oh, I could back up also with acupuncture. I didn't need the acupuncture because I really wasn't in pain. And I had this sort of little protocol I did, and it was, I mean, I was seeing patients 18 days later. I was like,
so cool.
Pretty crazy for me.
Yeah.
You know?
And of course, focusing on the kids, are they intrigued by this?
Oh, they loved it.
Yeah.
They love it.
I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's so many stories with them initially. Mm-hmm. And initially, of course, I didn't have a prosthetic because you have to allow the tissues to heal
and you
have to get that swelling down.
Yeah.
Then you get fitted for a prosthetic and then that has to all shrink over time. Then you get your final prosthetic. And so the parents were all advised beforehand. I had conversations beforehand on, you know, what to expect so that, and the conversation I wanted to have with the kids, and they named it. It's hilarious. And I would have fun with them. Like I literally initially when I was using a walker and I have no foot, I'm like, how come I keep missing the soccer ball? And they're like, cause you have no foot. Right. So it's been a magical experience. I'll tell you. Yeah. Yeah.
And that chapter is done in a sense. I think, you know, whatever that was, that cancerous growth, I mean, that's not part of you anymore. And I don't mean just because they removed it. I mean, the energetics of that.
Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah. So then I'm at another meditation and I'm in the field. And one of the things I didn't realize was that I hadn't sort of healed the ethereal body of that. And that's what I did another time as well. And, and it was, yeah, just the most amazing experience. And, you know, we are physical forms, but we're spirit in a physical form.
Amen.
Yeah.
That's it. Dr. Liz Anderson Peacock. What a wonderful journey we got to go on. Our Sunday conversation here recorded on a Friday, I think, but it feels alive on Sunday too. Blessed to meet you finally.
Thank you.
Just uncanny. Some of the history you had that we share. And I'm grateful for what you do. Anytime, you know, if you're breaking some news out of Canada and what you're doing up there, we love because we got so many fans up in Canada and I appreciate them so much and appreciate you for joining us on this conversation. And no prep at all. She's like, yeah, we'll do it. Like not knowing what she's getting into or anything.
No,
she's like,
not knowing at all. Not allowed to talk about that.
It was scary.
Yeah.
No, well, y'all, if you have loved it as much as I did, check out her website, drliz.ca. She's working on updating it like we've updated ours. robertscottbell.com. 6 days a week. This is, this is how we crank up the new week. And I'm grateful for our connection here. Thanks to Stu and Terry, the Warners, for connecting us as well. And God bless y'all. The power to heal is yours.